Welcome to our series on social capital. My name is Tristan Claridge, and I'm the director of the Institute for Social Capital. And I'm joined by Lyndon Robison, Emeritus Professor of Agricultural and Resource Economics at Michigan State University. Welcome, Lyndon.
Hello, Tristan. Good to see you. And I'm happy to be here and look forward to a lively discussion.
Lyndon and I share a passion for the concept of social capital, and we each have a long history of work on the idea. However, we come from different perspectives, Lyndon from economics, and my background is in sociology and social theory. Now, different perspectives and backgrounds make for very interesting conversations and engaging debate. In this episode, we're going to discuss social capital and its connection to the various social sciences. One of the reasons social capital has so many definitions is there's a lack of consensus among those who study it is because there's hardly a social science that hasn't embraced the concept of social capital and adopted it to promote its own interests. And the fact that scholars from different disciplines have published on social capital really is evidence that they think it can do something or has some kind of value for them and their disciplinary relevant work. So, Lyndon, perhaps a good place to start is with your experience with the interdisciplinary team in the Social Capital Interest Group.
Well, thank you, and that's where where my interest in social capital really did start. And I think what really created an interest in me was observing behavior that simply wasn't consistent with the underlying paradigm of selfish behavior and rational behavior. And so at that point, I realized that I really had to get acquainted with the perspective of other social scientists. So at Michigan State, with support from the provost, we formed an interdisciplinary group that met for several years and invited speakers. And it was a wonderful time for me because, first of all, I learned that we had different names for a lot of the same things. And so before we could make much progress, we had to take the time to appreciate each other's background. But then once we got past the vocabulary building stage, that exploring the contributions that each of our disciplines made was one of the most rewarding experiences of my academic career and shaped many years to come.
It must have been an interesting experience working with so many different people from different perspectives. Were you able to reach agreement about what social capital is? Like when you were talking about definitions, do you feel like any progress was made towards agreement?
Yes, no question about it. For example, one of the principles that I think we agreed on was that there were many cases where one person's behavior was influenced by another person or another group. And that's if we were going to take behavior serious, we had to recognize that we really, really were interdependent, and that to treat people as econs, as Richard Thaler talks about, as selfish, independent, a social kind of being, simply wasn't going to allow us to explain a lot of behavior that we observed.
Yeah, so you made progress. So that was was it the late 1980s, that interest group?
Yes. Yeah.
So you made progress on definition at that time, and there's been other attempts, of course, over the years to make progress on definitions, but here we are, 2024, and we have hundreds of different definitions being used, and it doesn't seem like we've reached a point where there's much agreement now. Is there anything about the different disciplines and the perspectives you think that we can that could explain this? You know, are there any generalizations about what the interests of different disciplines are that might help to illuminate why there's so many different definitions?
Well, yes, I think each discipline has its focus, For example, in economics, the focus is on maximizing behavior, consumers maximizing their resources to consume an ideal bundle and produce with the least cost for the maximum profit. But I'm not I'm somewhat more positive about the progress we've made since the late 80s to this point, even though there are still hundreds of definitions. It does seem to me that in a quiet moment, if we got this together in a room, we would agree that whatever social capital is, it has to do with the relationship. It has to recognize that we're interdependent, that our well-being depends on each other. And how the words that we use to express that, I think you can find in most of the major definitions, a recognition, yes, we're interested in the consequence, how we form relationships, how they impact our behavior and increase our ability to act collectively and so on. And that's progress. I think what is limiting our progress is when we fail to recognize just sort of basic requirements of a definition, such as A equals B. If you don't start with that and you say A has properties B or A can be used for this purpose, that's not a definition and will undoubtedly lead to confusion. But when we stick with the definition, I think we can recognize that we've made some progress.
And certainly different disciplines are going to see the world a little differently. The foundational assumptions, the frameworks that they use to understand the world around them, the problem spaces that they're interested in is are different. And perhaps, I don't know what sort of generalizations we can make, but perhaps economists walk around the world and they see exchanges between people, not necessarily commodities, but exchanges of relational goods, but they're interested in exchanges, whereas other social sciences might see power, powered struggles, power dynamics, or perhaps conflict. And it's very much like in other disciplines, an engineer might see strain and load and force, whereas an environmental scientist might see, impacts on natural systems, or a hydrologist might see different flows in a river. So everyone's going to see the world a little differently. And I guess then naturally there's going to be some different interpretations of what social capital is. And so we've discussed before about the possibility of coming up with just a single definition of social capital, and if everyone could agree on it. Seems to me that that might be undesirable at this particular time, because it would perhaps limit disciplines to certain framings that may not actually suit what they're interested in. But what are your thoughts about definitions, and whether or not we could agree on one or perhaps a small number of definitions?
Great question. If we introduce the idea of a paradigm, sort of an organized body of knowledge useful for explaining, predicting, analyzing behavior, which is of humans, which is what a social science would be about. And then you would say, well, what is a requirement of this paradigm, regardless of where it exists? What social science that exists? You would say, well, it must require a definition. It must have hypotheses. It must have variables that interact. There must be cause and effect relationships. There must be some attention to measuring and testing theories and so on. So if you said wherever the paradigm exists, they must all have something like those elements. And so, if we compare, let's say, the social capital paradigm with a paradigm of political science or sociology or anthropology or so on, you would say, okay, there will be differences as in the assumptions and the variables identified and definitions and so on. that have been useful in explaining a particular area of focus, a behavior focus, then at least we can begin by saying, well, how is measurement addressed in this paradigm versus this paradigm? And to what extent are they differentiated because we have different assumptions or different definitions? And then perhaps we might look at common elements across the definitions. And I think one common element that whatever discipline is addressing social capital, and they call it social capital, we must be able to agree that capital has these properties. And if whatever you're defining as social capital is really capital, then it must have these properties. And if it doesn't, what you're defining is something, but it's probably not capital. And so maybe don't call it social capital, call it something else.
Yeah, I mean, I've been curious. People in the literature often refer to the capital nature of social capital as a metaphor, that it's capital-like. I've always been intrigued as well, what properties does it have if it's a metaphor? Does that mean that it's just something that's good, something that is that we want to have that is positive? Is that capital-like enough to use the capital metaphor? Or does it really actually need to have some properties of capital to be capital-like? Does it need to be a stock, a potential, something that we can invest in? And I think these are important questions to ask. And I guess in terms of establishing a paradigm and getting some agreement and consistency, that seems like a simple place to start.
Well, and it is not only a simple place to start, but it's essential because there's are implications of a paradigm that has as its core capital. Because if you introduce the concept of capital, then you must also discuss, well, how do you maintain it? What does it produce? What does it act on? How can it be changed? How does it depreciate? There are a whole host of questions that are associated with the concept of capital. And so it guides that term, social capital, really guides discussion into particular avenues that I think can produce sort of, if you want to use the word, pillars of shared understanding. And so definitions have consequences. And if you use the word social capital and really believe it, that has consequence for the way you construct the social capital paradigm.
Yeah, and I think that has been a tendency as well in the literature for certain interpretations to take on a life of their own and to be perhaps misunderstood. Maybe that's not quite the right word to use, by people from other disciplines who read the work of, say, a sociologist and then think that it means a certain thing, and then they apply it in a way that is probably inconsistent with the way that it was intended to be used. And this, if we had some agreement, if there was a more established paradigm and we worked more on the foundations of what social capital is and reached some agreement across some basics, then it should reduce the potential for those kinds of misunderstandings to occur and the potential for for things to take on a life of their own and go in directions that aren't particularly helpful. And the one example I'm thinking of is that we all have a need to measure social capital, and that rightly, we need to use indicators or proxies of what social capital is, depending on data restrictions and limitations. We may need to use indicators that are a pretty good fit, but they don't perfectly represent what it is that we think social capital really is. But then following scholars may come along and see, for example, that somebody has measured social capital as the incidence of social support, which is a logical indicator of the existence of social capital. But then they've said that, well, social capital is social support. And then they've taken that forward, and that's created a bit of a minefield where it's really disconnected from the idea of capital and any kind of theoretical foundations that were originally established. So interested in your thoughts about how this process of building a paradigm might help I guess, improve the scholarship of social capital research and practice.
So I couldn't agree more that if we're going to make progress in developing a paradigm, we have to develop methods of measuring the concept social capital, or at least its consequences. Because if there's no ability to measure it, then we have a concept that's going to remain abstract and largely not very applicable. And so the ability to measure is going to be critical. So we, and this will lead to a lot of different approaches. For example, maybe the only thing we can measure is the consequences of social capital and what it produces. And so if that's the approach that one wants to take toward measurement, then one has to establish the standard against which you can measure. So in some of the work that I participated in, we built on the definition of social capital as being relationships of sympathy and empathy and so on, and tried to look at what the terms and level of exchange would be between strangers versus between those who did have relationships of empathy. And we're able to say, okay, yes, there were noticeable differences and they were predictable in some ways. Now, is that definitive? No, it clearly depended on our definition of social capital. And someone else that had a different definition might come up with different measures and indicators. And maybe if we continue to work together and counsel together, we'll get closer to more consistent ways of defining social capital, measuring it, and looking at the consequences. But I think along the path, we're going to have to be willing to have a certain amount of fuzziness in the way we define it and measure it and so on. But measuring it and defining it has to be part of the development of the paradigm.
Yeah, and I think it's been an interesting process for the two of us over the last couple of years. We've been talking regularly and we've been able to understand the language that we use and the terminology that we use. And we've become even quite familiar with it to such an extent now that we seem to be using each other's terminology in our own language when we're discussing ideas with each other. But interestingly, when we each publish, we're sticking to largely our own terminology. And so, even though we've reached agreement and we understand each other's language and we even perhaps share that language at times, we're still quite separate in the way that we write about social capital. Have we made progress there? Like, clearly we've deepened our understanding, but we, in terms of the publications, we're still quite different in the way we talk about it.
I think, at least in my own case, I think I've made progress. I mean, the concept of social acts is clearly something that I borrowed from you. And I think the idea of relational goods purely wasn't my creation. I think the idea of attachment value, which I use a lot, was suggested by a sociologist in the interest group that I participated in. Where the problem seems to be is in the discussion of power, which, if you think of this is an example of the ability to influence the behavior of others. And typically we think of, well, I could influence behavior with economic resources or threats or something. But social capital introduces kind of another source of power that when you internalize my well-being, I do have some influence on your behavior. And that isn't recognized unless we allow for the concept of social capital that has to do with relationships. So existing terms that are being used by both of us, or people outside our discipline, when we both use the same term, but we use it differently, that's where I think we have to work hard to make sure that we understand that we're using the term similarly, but with some differences. And I'll give you one further example. I've been working on the concept of social structures, patterns of relationship determined by relationships. Well, social structures is a well-known concept that often has to do with power from different kinds of sources. So now we have two concepts referring to social structure, but understood by people in different disciplines differently, I think.
Yeah, and certainly my understanding of social capital has been significantly deepened by our conversations. And partly because, in the process of reaching the shared understanding, understanding your language, and then when you question me about the terminology I use, I need to think about that more deeply. And often that requires me to justify, to explore, to explain, to work out why it is that I use the terminology that I use. And that then helps me to understand that terminology so much better and to construct a deeper understanding of the theory. And I have become quite comfortable using what I guess is economic types of terminology, exchange of relational goods. I think I've found myself saying that myself sometimes. And I think that's a strength because it allows us to be comfortable and familiar with different ways of framing these issues and different ways of understanding the concept of social capital, and certainly from a much, much deeper perspective as well. And it's something that I guess everybody would benefit from. There seems to be a general lack of discourse across social capital as a paradigm. What do you think?
My life is richer and my understanding is deeper because of my interaction with people outside of my discipline. And of course, I'll always be grateful for the background that I received in economics, but it's surely been made more important, more useful as I sort of absorb concepts from people in other social sciences. And so I think that that tells me something. And it is that whatever the social capital paradigm is, because I think I would claim that it has reached the stage of a paradigm, it doesn't exist solely within a discipline. It sort of exists in the middle of a lot of disciplines, and we, depending on our interests and background, we may, extract elements of the social capital paradigm, but I think we should be cautious in saying it isn't owned by a particular discipline, and if we can move forward and agree on what are some core concepts like. It is capital. Do we agree that it is capital? And if so, do we agree that it has capital-like properties? Then we can sort of move from there to saying, well, what does social capital produce from the view of a political scientist or a sociologist or an anthropologist? And then we could talk about sort of that element and say, yeah, I learn from you. What you're seeing produced is different than what I emphasize, but at least we agree that social capital has to produce something.
I think that's the important point. I recently revisited some of the literature on altruism coming out of evolutionary biology, and it reminded me that there's contributions to social capital can be made from such diverse perspectives. And what we currently lack is a framework or a consistency to be able to take and incorporate these different explanations and different ideas about the nature of human relationships in a way that is systematic without it becoming an ad hoc kind of piecemeal effort where we're just bringing together bits and pieces and we don't actually understand how they fit together in a consistent or a logical way. And that seems to be one of the key criticisms of social capital overall, is that it can be quite piecemeal. There can be lots of different bits. There's often lists of different factors. It's networks, it's norms, it's trust, it's goodwill, it's solidarity. And the list kind of goes on, and you end up left thinking, well, how are these individual elements? How do they fit together? What is the consistent logic here between all of this list? And is it an exhaustive list, or are there other things that aren't included that other people might go, oh, there's this as well, and just simply add and add and add and add in a way that is really challenging to developing a theory. And I guess that's what we've been talking about from the beginning of this episode, is that if we could establish some agreement and some framework around it and the paradigm, then we would be able to understand how these various bits fit in a way that is logical and consistent without it feeling like it was piecemeal and ad hoc and chaotic, quite frankly.
I agree. I couldn't agree more. And I think as we develop, I think for a long time, we've also kind of looked longingly over at the physical scientists and said, gosh, if we had a world like you, where the laws of chemistry or physics or mathematics we sort of agreed on, and we used those as the basis. And I think we look at each other and say, do we have anything like that to direct our study of relationships and social capital and so on? And could we work on that? Would they be helpful? So, maybe that's something that we look forward to in the future, is having some concepts that we say, yes, this seems to generally apply to how relationships are formed or transitioned or what they produce, those kind of things.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's all we've got time for today, Lyndon. Been another fascinating episode, and look forward to the next conversation we have about social capital.
Look forward to it. Bye, everyone. Nice to be with you.
See you next time.